You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
You're hearing the sounds of picketing from SAG-AFTRA members outside of Netflix headquarters in Los Gatos. It's been just over 2 weeks since the Screen Actors Guild began its strike and joined the ranks of the Writers Guild of America, who have been engaged on the front lines of this dispute with studios since May 2nd. It's also the first time the two unions have been in a simultaneous strike since 1960. And at the heart of these strikes is something familiar to many of us, financial stability. But there's something new in there as well that we're having to grapple with these days, artificial intelligence and the role it will play in our lives. But with negotiations between the unions and the studios currently at a standstill, what does this mean for Hollywood going forward? And when it's all said and done, will there still be a space for those who dream of making it big on the silver and even the smaller screen? Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. And to help us make sense of all of this, I'm turning to Kate Fortmuller, Associate Professor of Film and Media History at Georgia State University. Historically speaking, you know, how important or how big of a deal is it that this is happening at the same time?
So I'll say, historically speaking, it's very important that it's this year happening at the same time, in the sense that it's only the second time this has ever happened. I think one of the big reasons that this is so important is also that when actors go on strike, that shuts down a lot more production than when just the writers go on strike, because of the nature of Hollywood television shows, right? There are certain things that that writers would need to be on set, but you can't make anything that at least that we watch on television or streaming that we AI, they have not got, the studios have not gotten what they want with AI. So at this point, we need actors on screen, on set, to make the shows and films that we all sort of, you know, crave and like to watch. It's a really big deal. It would be a big deal at any point, just because this really does shut down Hollywood in a way that strikes don't always shut down quite everything.
You know, you bring up AI, which I think is obviously this is a topic that we have in so many aspects of our lives now, where AI, artificial intelligence, is becoming this sort of tipping point that we're talking about when it comes to jobs, when it comes to what are humans going to be doing and what are they not going to be doing. And in the world of media and of creative arts, this is a huge sticking point for what the Writers Guild and Screen Actors Guild are dealing with. So what exactly are they asking of the studios when it comes to that? What is it that they're actually looking for here?
Yeah, so I think first thing I would probably say, and this helps me kind of mentally parse this, is to think about what they're concerned with is generative AI. We all, at this point, we are kind of used to various types of computer programs and CGI and technology that can, say, de-age Harrison Ford, right? Make him, if for those of us who saw Indiana Jones, right, the opening scene, we have young Harrison Ford with old Harrison Ford's voice. And so there is all sorts of technology and kind of like, you know, computer technology that Hollywood does rely on and like for the things that they're producing. But what actors and writers are concerned about is AI that would be used to produce new work that in the case of writers, that they would be, it would, AI would create the kind of premise that they would then be asked to polish. And that polish would allow the studios to copyright the work, because they can't copyright things produced by AI. And the actors are concerned about essentially kind of where some of the strike broke down was that they might get some sort of like loose protections about AI, but nothing really enforceable. And they want to have control over when and how their likeness is used in every project, not to just sort of, you know, get scanned or whatever the procedure is, right? And then have that be used without their control, without them having a full understanding of how it's being used. And I think all of that sounds incredibly reasonable. I think if you think about what actors are used to, they're used to having control, or like at least if they have sort of good representation, control over how their likeness is used in terms of marketing and publicity. And they are used to knowing what they are acting in. And that's part, their body is sort of part of what they are using as like an expressive vehicle. And ask basically kind of at studios, I think, asking them to really just kind of give up control over their bodies and likeness, I think is a bridge too far and a bit of a stretch for asking some people, you know, who are committed to this profession to do that.
Well, I know, you know, and this is, you know, kind of a side thing, but that was the most recent season of Black Mirror, the very first episode is tackling the idea of signing away yourself, basically.
Yeah. I was going to say, I actually have not watched the recent season of Black Mirror, but the one I feel like there's a movie called The Congress that I want to say came out in 2013 with Robin Wright that I feel like deals with a lot of these issues. It's essentially she signs away her likeness and then has to go to kind of like reassess and, you know, wade through the various fake Robin Wrights that are at this convention that she goes to. So, I think these are, you know, I think this is also part of why, like, I think as audience members, there's a few things that have come up. Like one of the kind of, I think, most maybe terrifying quotes, depending on your perspective, was that the AMPTP said that they wanted to scan background actors and use their likeness for the background in movies in perpetuity. And I think we have a lot of sci-fi that makes us kind of inherently a bit like fearful of that. I think that that's a very, you know, my feeling as somebody who's written actually about extras and read a lot about extras historically is that I think extra work is how a lot of people connect to the media industries. And I do think that it's very short-sighted for studios to try to sort of excise extras from the industry. So I think it's a little short-sighted in that regard. But yeah, we have a lot of sci-fi that makes us inherently scared of the things that they are saying. And I think if you're trying to get public opinion on your side, I think those are not the kinds of things that will get public opinion on your side.
Well, and that does kind of bring to mind, I think you used the phrase, you know, a bridge too far, and but obviously the studios are kind of holding firm right now when it, you know, comes to negotiations. I think the most recent thing that I saw, that there's been no new set time for like another meetup to negotiate between SAG and the studios. So what about the studios? We could sort of easily just say, well, you know, they want to keep making money without having to pay people money, that kind of argument. But are they seeing something about AI and their own plans that they think is going to, I don't know, save studios or keep studios growing as time goes on?
That's a great question. I mean, I do think, you know, when I'm thinking, I kind of, my feeling is something like AI would be an ultimate strike breaker, right? So as I was sort of saying before, when the actors go on strike, it's a really big deal because you can't make things without actors. If they've signed over their likeness in perpetuity, you can get a little bit more work done, it turns out. So I think that AI would come in handy with kind of further disenfranchising workers, you know, from the studio perspective. I mean, I think in something like this, where the technology is still developing and it's not totally clear what the future of it is, I think this is the kind of thing where they're just trying to retain as much leverage as possible. That would basically be my kind of assessment of it. You know, I think ultimately, sort of, and not to, I don't necessarily want to get too like in the weeds for listeners, but I do think when you sort of looking at what the WGA has asked for and what SAG-AFTRA has asked for, the studios or the AMPTP, so studios, networks, and streamers, all seem more willing to negotiate on things that have been established in previous negotiations. So things like salary raises, even though they're far apart on that, and also residuals, although they're still far apart on that as well. But these things that are newer issues, they seem a little bit more hesitant to do. And I think ultimately they're going to have to be, I think, you know, the actors have said, the Actors Guild, Duncan Crabtree Ireland, as the chief negotiator has said, we're not trying to stop AI. We just want some protections for the actors. So I think they're going to have to be a little bit more, that's, I think, those are the places where they're going to have to give a little bit more, I think, in order for this to kind of move to making a deal. And they will make a deal eventually, right? These things end, strikes end. They're not a permanent state. It's just a question right now of when they'll come to the table. It seems like everyone is very, you know, tempers are flared. It's a very heated time. So I don't really, you know, I think for people to come back into a conversation, there has to be somebody with a cooler head who can sort of lead the charge.
Right. I am curious about what that will take, especially as you said, as emotions are running kind of hot right now. And it's easy to kind of to put the focus on AI as like the thing, as I think, as I said earlier, but simply because it's such a big part of other conversations as well right now. And it's uncharted territory for a lot of people. But you bring up, you know, the other side to what the strikes are about, which are things that were already understood and in context for both guilds and the studios, stuff like, you know, salaries and, you know, things that we can all relate to a certain degree. And it doesn't seem like there's much movement there either. Why is that also kind of slowed down on top of the AI conversation, which doesn't seem to have a good answer right now?
Right. I mean, yeah. And I think that, so yeah, so salary residuals, which are payment for reuse of material. But then there's these other things for writers and actors, right, that are about kind of how they work. So like self-tape auditions for the actors or mini rooms for the writers. So I kind of and also in terms of the actors and the writers, what they want is a little bit more transparency from streaming services about viewership, but that ties into residuals. So I sort of think about these in sort of like 3 to 4 kind of camps, I guess, of like what the key issues are. I think one of the things that's really different about this set of negotiations is, as much as I think it's hard for us to like think, it feels like, especially after, psychologically, it feels like we've had Netflix forever. And we kind of have, right? But a lot of this growth in these streaming services has been since 2020. Disney Plus launched in 2019, HBO Max, you know, the ever-changing kind of HBO Discovery company launched in 2020. So a lot of these companies, these streaming services are fairly new. And previously, Amazon, Apple, and Netflix were not negotiating as part of the AMPTP. So they were negotiating their contracts separately. And they had a little bit more leeway because they were, quote, kind of new. And this has happened historically, that you'll have the unions negotiating with these kind of new upstarts at one point, right? These were the television networks. And there's a little bit of leeway in the early days to figure out how things, services are going to monetize things. So they were paying lower rates. 2020 was the last time these contracts were renegotiated. And streaming has done nothing really but grow, despite the kind of like misstep that Netflix had, like a year ago, these streaming services have become the kind of dominant way of distributing media. The finances of them are, I think, still a little bit unclear. How are they going to make money, et cetera? But, you know, essentially these contracts were negotiated before. So we don't really, and we, because the AMPTP speaks through consensus, it's really hard to know where the holdouts are and where the pressure is coming from. Is the pressure coming from these kind of tech companies like Amazon, Apple, and Netflix, or is it coming from studios? My inclination is to think that it's coming from these really, you know, massive tech companies that have really different labor cultures than Hollywood studios that have been negotiating with these unions for almost 100 years, right? I think there's an understanding of residuals for the studios and the networks that is not quite as clear, shall we say, with tech companies that have different ways of paying and incentivizing workers.
I think that's a really good point, actually, and something that maybe people don't necessarily think about when they think about these new, relatively new anyway, players in how we are getting our entertainment and how they understand what workers, if you want to put it in that way, are supposed to be doing one way or the other, and how negotiations are supposed to go compared to what might be the usual for more traditional studios. So how is the tech side of this changing how we perceive media and creation of media?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would sort of add in terms of thinking about this like tech model, I think that's kind of an important, I think it's an important way for people that I don't think people think about, but I think it's a good thing for people to think about, is how much we have adopted the word content in reference to film and television. So one of the things to know is that those distinctions between film and television matter, and they matter in really sort of material ways for people who work in Hollywood. So residuals are paid out based on where it was originally released and then where it was re-released, and then viewership numbers from that. And I think one of the things the tech industry has been very good at doing is sort of subtly erasing distinctions between film and television. And this is something that we've all sort of, if we're not attentive to this, that a lot of people have really adopted into their language, that everything is content. Everything that you get from your Apple TV or from your computer is content, right? Articles, music, films, television shows. And I think it's maybe worth thinking a little bit about how we talk about these things and trying to remember that these distinctions matter and that these are things that are being created by people, right? They're not, and the distinctions matter.
That's a really good point, and something I can say that I hadn't thought of before either. You said earlier, you know, obviously that there will be an end. There's going to be an end to the strike. We might not know exactly when that's going to be, but obviously anything like this has its ramifications no matter what, and no matter what, you know, the negotiation outcomes might be. And we're seeing things somewhat now, or there's at least the trepidation that things are going to, you know, productions are slowing down, you know, actors not being at screenings, that kind of thing, or going to Comic-Con. So we're going to look big picture for a minute. What are the implications of this strike right now? And what's your perspective on how this might affect things going forward?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the things I would say as far as moving forward, I think one thing that we can all sort of look to in terms of ramifications is thinking a bit about the pandemic, right? Which was another kind of, right, was a very widespread shutdown.
Exactly.
World, right. So I think right now what we have, and this has been kind of like, I think, an interesting thing to sort of think about. We tend to think about many things are produced in LA and New York, and those are the big hubs. I live in Georgia, which is the third largest place for media production in the United States. Georgia spent $1.3 billion in tax incentives last year. So we have a tremendous amount of production here, which wasn't largely shut down because there weren't picket lines, because we don't have a lot of writers here, right? So the Teamsters and IATSE refused to cross the picket lines, and that's what's shutting down production. Right now, we have House of the Dragon shooting under an equity contract in the UK, and anything that's sort of shooting, a lot of things, there's still things shooting in the UK, right? So this is actually in many ways less of a shutdown than what we had during the pandemic, but it's still significant. And sometimes these shutdowns can be used as excuses to cancel shows. So your favorite show could get canceled. I think Stranger Things hasn't started shooting. Not worried about Stranger Things picking back up because it's such a huge show for Netflix. But if there's a show that was maybe on the bubble and they kind of shot a few episodes or it wasn't ready, maybe they'll decide not to renew it. So I think some shows might disappear. This can be really disruptive for people who are starting their careers. As a professor, I obviously have a lot of students who are trying to enter the media industries, and this is the kind of thing that kind of slows things down for them. That being said, I think many of my students who I have talked to are obviously very supportive of this because they don't want to be staffed in on a mini room as a writer because they wouldn't get paid very much and they wouldn't get trained very well. So they support the issues, but it's still, I think it's still hard because you're not doing the thing that you want to be doing. So, it can be really disruptive for individual, obviously, like people aren't making money. This can be really hard on people who are trying to make their days to get their health care. So it's financially disruptive in a whole host of ways. Strikes hurt. And that's the reality of it. It's not, no one's doing this for fun. It doesn't happen very often. Right. The actors, this is only the third major strike for the actors, 1960, 1980, and 2023. There have been other strikes on different contracts, but if we're thinking about the film and theatrical one, this doesn't happen often. So things have to be really bad for them to walk out. And I think, I think they know that there's, I think everyone kind of is aware of those risks involved and the kind of ramifications. I think if you're thinking back to how might this impact us as audience members, the things I mentioned, sort of things could be canceled. Shows like, in 88, reality TV was the solution for non-union productions. We could be captivated by some other kind of, who knows, a whole host of Korean shows might drop on Netflix and, we'll have like 10 different Squid Games that everyone's captivated by. But something else could grab our attention and distract us from, the American shows that we've been watching. Things will fill the gap. And in the case of streaming services that rely on a lot of global producers and have an eye towards a global business, that might mean that, we're getting more global content and become more interested in it. And that becomes more essential to the business models. And with Korea, we know that Squid Game is, it was not a non-union show. They're not getting residuals at all. So for streamers, that's a really appealing model because it's really cheap for them.
Well, and, I was thinking as you were saying this, I was thinking about, all the changes, obviously, that the world of media has gone through over the long, long years that we've been creating media that can be shared and seen and heard by people. And what you were just saying about something that will fill the gaps or fill the spaces. And I do wonder then if other things are able to sort of step in and be there and they were to catch on with a viewing audience, does that end up kind of just weakening what the WGA and SAG are aiming for in the end?
It sort of depends. I don't know that, I think one of the things that happened, so I said that SAG has gone on strike for other for other contracts. And in 2000, they went on strike or walked out of negotiations for their commercials contract. And I feel like we obviously talk a lot about the film and television contract, because I think that those are the things that we enjoy watching. But the commercial contract is a very lucrative contract for actors. Like, a lot of people for years were really making their days and their living from commercials. And that was such a sort of long strike that eventually what happened is a lot of production companies just started shooting commercials outside of the US and going non-union and decided they don't really need the unions. So I don't really think that's going to happen at this tier. But I think that, yeah, I think when things can go too long, and that can ultimately be bad for unions and bad for workers. So the question is sort of like, you know, I think that the members, right, you have stars, you have such a kind of interesting group, right, that in SAG-AFTRA you have huge stars, and then you have, you know, the journeyman actor, the working actor background, and all everything in between. So I think with something like this particular contract, I don't really think that's a huge risk, but there are certain things where, yeah, I think if a non-union, some sort of non-union thing or non-US thing bubbles up and fills a lot of space, that means fewer projects. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think that more projects does not mean a better living. This is what we know from this era of peak TV, right? These streaming services pay minimums, and minimums are what they're fighting for right now. So they pay the minimums. These things are done cheaply. They've come up with these kinds of mini room things that are, you know, end up paying even less. They've gotten rid of like episodic fees for some of these shows. Foreign residuals are kind of nothing. So I think ultimately I think there is a risk, but I think that things are really bad right now for those who are trying to make it in this business. And, you know, again, like, they wouldn't be doing this if things weren't really, really bad. And they're fighting for minimums. So, yeah.
Professor Fortmuller, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It was great to talk to you about this.
For listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.